Biden investigation that Mr. Giuliani was pushing. I briefed the call in detail of the deputy chief of mission, went away for a week, come back, I refer to the call, and everyone is nodding. Of course that's what's going on. Of course the president is pressing for a Biden investigation before he'll do these things the Ukrainians want. There was nodding agreement. Everyone by that point agreed. It was obvious what the president was pressing for.
I was in a briefing with several people, and I just spoke up and I said, it appears that everything is stalled until this statement gets made, something that words to that effect. And the vice president nodded like, you know, he heard what I said. And that was pretty much it, as I recall. Mr. Giuliani's requests were a quid pro quo for arranging a White House visit for President Zelensky. Mr. Giuliani demanded that Ukraine make a public statement announcing the investigations of the 2016 election DNC server and Burisma. Mr. Giuliani was expressing the desires of the President of the United States, and we knew these investigations were important to the president. Was there a quid pro quo? As I testified previously, with regard to the requested White House call and the White House meeting, the answer is yes. Everyone was in the loop. President Trump, Vice President Pence, Secretary Perry, Ambassador Volker, Secretary Pompeo, Ambassador Bolton, Chief of Staff Mulvaney, Rudy Giuliani. Everyone was in the loop. It was no secret.
It struck me one yesterday when you put up on the screen Ambassador Sondland's emails and who was on these emails, and he said, these are the people who need to know, that he was absolutely right, because he was being involved in a domestic political errand. And we were being involved in national security foreign policy, and those two things had just diverged. And I did say to him, Ambassador Sondland, Gordon, I think this is all going to blow up, and here we are.
We all understood that these prerequisites for the White House call and the right White House meeting reflected President Trump's desires and requirements at the express direction of the President of the United States. We followed the President's orders.
Ms. Williams, you heard the call with your own ears, right?
Yes, sir.
Not secondhand, not hearsay. You heard the President speak. You heard his voice on the call.
Correct.
And your conclusion was what he said about investigating the Bidens was, your words, unusual and inappropriate, I believe. Am I right?
That was my testimony.
And then later, you too were on the White House call. Am I right? You heard it with your own ears.
Correct.
Not secondhand, not from somebody else, not hearsay, right?
Correct.
You heard the president's voice on the call.
I did.
And you heard him raise that subject again that Ambassador Sondland had raised before about investigating the Bidens, right?
I did.
As it became apparent that Mr. Giuliani was having a direct influence on the foreign policy agenda that the three amigos were executing on the ground in Ukraine. My recollection is that Ambassador Sondland stated, quote, damn it, Rudy. Every time Rudy gets involved, he goes and Fs everything up.
This weekend, the president's lawyer went on Fox News to say he's not worried his client might expect him to take the fall for Ukraine.
I've seen things written like, he's going to throw me under the bus.
Right.
When they say that, I say, he isn't, but I have insurance.
It's not the first time Rudy Giuliani has said so. He also told The Guardian he has insurance in case Trump turns on him. But Giuliani now says in a tweet he's being sarcastic.
It's rumored they're investigating me for bribery. I like to know who I bribed. I don't bribe people. I've been doing this for 50 years of my life. I've never had a complaint. I think people understand that I have a very, very great passion for corruption.
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
Everybody!
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
Not once was the name Burisma or the Bidens mentioned to me, not by the president, not by Rudy Giuliani, and not by Gordon Sondland.
Mr. Giuliani conveyed to Secretary Perry, Ambassador Volker, and others that President Trump wanted a public statement from President Zelensky committing to investigations of Burisma and the 2016 election.
Ready? You have the cameras rolling? I want nothing. That's what I want from Ukraine. That's what I said. I want nothing.
We'll be right back.
nothing. I want 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 nothing.
An angry old man shouting into the phone, I want nothing, I want nothing. Here's why he might have been a bit of a cranky pants that day. This phone call happened the same day the whistleblower complaint was delivered to the House Intelligence Committee. You gotta say, that's really suspicious timing. That's like waiting till your parents are pulling into the driveway to text them, please come home, somebody broke into the house, threw a huge party, and hit all the vodka in my stomach.
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
Everybody!
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
Look, I know you probably have a lot of questions for me about this impeachment nonsense. And I'd love to answer every single one of them, believe me, I do. But as you can see from this very loud running helicopter behind me, I'm in a big, big hurry right now, so I don't really have the time. But everything is perfect, okay? Thanks for all your questions. And I really should be heading out right now, okay?
Wait, Mr. President, just a few questions.
Can you comment on Ambassador Sondland's damning testimony about your illegal dealings with Ukraine?
I can't really hear you that good because of this lousy chopper behind me. But it sounds like you said Sondland's testimony completely exonerated me, and I totally agree. I actually wrote down notes from his testimony that proves my innocence, and I used the biggest, fattest, blackest magic marker I could find. I love black magic markers, by the way. I know most people use Sharpies. They smell like licorice. Anyway, like I was saying, I got to go to Michigan right now.
Wait, Mr. President. Exactly which part of Sondland's testimony proves your innocence?
It's right here in my notes of super important conversations on the phone I've had. I'll read one, but then I got to split, okay? This is me and Ambassador Sondland talking. He says to me, what do you want? And I answer, two large pies, extra cheese, extra sauce. No, wait. That's a different phone call. Oh, here it is. I said to Sondland, I want nothing. No quid pro quo, bro. See? It's right here in black licorice, case closed. Okay? I have to go get on this chopper right now.
Hold on, Mr. President, but that wasn't the only conversation you've had with Ambassador Sondland.
It doesn't matter. I still told him no quid pro quo at least once, so any quid that I get after that, that's on them. So that's how it works, see, okay? It's just like when you meet a girl and you say, if you're a cop, you gotta tell me. Besides, I don't even know this Ambassador Sondland guy. That's fake news.
But he's donated $1 million to your inauguration.
And you appointed him to the EU.
Well, I know him, but I don't know him. I never, like, met him in person. Look, I'd love to explain, but this battery on this chopper is going to die very, very soon. Look, I'm holding everybody up, okay? No. Oh, it's you, Ambassador Sondland.
Mr. Trump, can you at least elaborate on your comments yesterday on Fox and Friends, where you said Adam Schiff was the whistleblower?
No. I never said he was the whistleblower, okay? It's so great to finally meet you for the first time, by the way.
Oh, right. Keep the quid pro quo on the Lolo. Got it.
Yeah. I just was leaving right now.
Hang on. I just want to go on the record and say, you guys need to lay off my boy. Everybody loves his ass.
Thank you.
Ukraine, Russia.
That's enough.
They'll do anything for this man. Oh. I know. I asked.
All right. I gotta go. In conclusion, no quid pro quo.
Oh, there definitely was.
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
Everybody.
There's just one thing that you need to know.
Testimony in the impeachment hearing concluded in the House this week, and now the debate will shift to your house for Thanksgiving. It was reported last night that one of the stars of the hearing, Congressman Devin Nunes, who has resting SpongeBob face, allegedly met in secret last year with a Ukrainian prosecutor to get dirt on the Biden. So the guy who's supposed to be investigating Trump helped him do the crime. Nunes is so deep in this, he's basically living in a pineapple under the sea. Now, the source of this theory about Nunes is a little unreliable, so I probably shouldn't even have mentioned it on TV. But hey, that never stopped Devin Nunes. Remember when he said this about Democrats?
They got caught trying to obtain nude photos of President Trump from Russian pranksters.
Yeah, somehow I don't think Russia has a lot of pranksters. It's not like when the president of Russia poisons a journalist, he jumps out and yells, "You just got Putin'd." But the big revelation this week was that EU Ambassador Gordon Sondland explicitly tied President Trump, Mike Pompeo, and Mike Pence to the Ukraine scandal. It's especially tough for Pence, whose greatest fear is being tied to something by another man.
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
Everybody!
There's just one thing that you need to know.
Was there a quid pro quo? The answer is yes.
The testimony this week has directly tied virtually every senior official in Trump's inner circle to a corrupt quid pro quo, in which the president used hundreds of millions of dollars in taxpayer money appropriated by Congress to solicit a bribe from a foreign country to help him in the 2020 election. That's it.
Our president made it clear to Ukraine, you're not getting the money you need to keep your people alive unless you help me win the election, and that's it. And the idea that he was fighting corruption, Donald Trump, not only does Donald Trump care about corruption in Ukraine, he wanted it. He tried to buy it. Honestly, at this point, the only defense that might work for them is Donald Trump is too stupid to know he committed a crime.
The president of the United States solicited a bribe from a foreign country to interfere in the 2020 election, and everyone knew about it. We have the testimony. We have the evidence. That's it. It's an open and shut case.
This is from the president's Twitter feed. I'm fighting for future presidents in the office of the president. Other than that, I'd actually like people to testify. Don McGahn's respected lawyer has already stated that I did nothing wrong. John Bolton is a patriot and may know that I held back the money from Ukraine because it is considered a corrupt country. And I wanted to know why nearby European countries aren't putting up money also. Likewise, I would love to have Mike Pompeo, Rick Perry, Mick Mulvaney, and many others testify about the phony impeachment hoax. How might that age, Neil Katyal?
The idea that he wants to, like, go and have these people testify, that can happen tomorrow. Bring it on. But this president isn't doing that. He's gagged all those very people in that tweet, Pompeo, Bolton, etc., from going and testifying. And that's why the way you started this program was to talk about the House Judiciary Committee invitation next week for hearings. And the very last line of that order, of that letter that Chairman Nadler wrote, is very significant because it says to the president, if you continue to stonewall, if you continue not to produce witnesses and documents, we reserve the right for appropriate remedies. And what I think that's getting at is what happened in Nixon, because in Nixon, Nicole, mm-hmm. Nixon tried to order that same stonewalling, and the Senate said, if you do that, we're going to all order these witnesses here, and we're going to start jailing them. And I read what Chairman Nadler did as that kind of threat. Nixon, of course, backed down famously and allowed people to testify. I sure hope President Trump does this. I hope he follows what's in that tweet, because if he doesn't, he's hiding the truth from the American people.
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
Everybody!
There's just one thing that you need to know. Trump said, do us a favor, though.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Okay, very nice. Now, I think I have your mic up. Kamal, I never know which one. You might. Oh, that's mic two, so I'm going to turn mic three off. See that? I'm getting good. I don't have sound effects like you guys.
Us guys at Drive Time every Wednesday from 4 to 6.
Shameless plug. I love it.
On WGXC.
Seriously, great show, and certainly happy to plug you guys. And welcome, though, to Talk with Tanner.
Yeah, this is actually my first official time being on.
It is.
Any
that's
other
right.
time that I was on, I kind of bust in. And
that's right. And the first time we just little old me solo, because
I think
the last time you were here and it was something to talk about when my good buddy Justin was with me, and he's taking a sabbatical, but miss him. Shout out to Justin. So it's just me here, and you know, no sound effects, but I try. So appreciate your time, Mayor.
Yeah,
I'm really looking forward to hearing from you about your you know, the win and the goals and you know, what your thoughts are. And so first off, let me say congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations. You must be excited.
Yeah, I am. It's actually a funny story about the chairman who just got off the line. When I was working in the opioid epidemic for the Department of Health, I read one of his columns, and it had all the programs but the one that I was working with for the opioid epidemic. So I like went to his office and I like knocked on the door. I was like sat out in the lobby and came out, and I was like, hey, do you know that like this program is going on in your county and like this is happening? He was like, oh, really? I'll make sure you get a part in the next column. And he did it.
Oh, good.
Which was great.
Oh,
and
good.
Very supportive of the program. But, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Like,
oh, that's funny. So you're not a shy guy. Is that what you're saying?
No. Come on. I mean, I am, but not when it comes to, like, you know, certain settings.
Yeah, advocating for right, right. Well, that's good to hear. So if you don't know, first off, this is Holly Tanner, your host of Talk with Tanner, right here on WGXC, Acre Catskill Hudson, 90.7 FM, and it's listener-supported radio for open ears, which is so important because, you know, we are not a corporation company. We're a private little local radio station that can bring you programming like Drive Time and like Talk with Tanner and a lot of the other great programs. So thanks for tuning in, and thanks again to Kamal for, you know, coming on a Tuesday to talk with me. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about, you know, what led to this, and then, you know, what your thoughts are about being elected. Like, election's over now, so now it's really sunk in.
It's a relief. What led to this is, you know, I tell this story all the time where I was in 11th grade, and one of my teachers used to always call me like the mayor of the class, because I used to, you know, argue about the curriculum. I used to get everybody riled up and following me, and we used to do just funny stuff all the time in class. And
okay.
She used to always call me Mayor Kamal. So one day in class, I created a sign that said Kamal for Mayor, and I hung it up on the wall in her classroom. And like, that was kind of the first like early thoughts of, you know, it could be a possibility. I never thought that it would come into fruition, because I had other goals, but it was always something that was in the back of my mind, especially as I was like becoming more of a community leader. And like, I noticed it like in 12th grade when we had a situation where everybody in the county like failed this math regents, and the Board of Education was trying to figure out whether to throw the test out, or should we go to summer school, or would we have to come back another year and we wouldn't be able to graduate. And I was in that cohort. So I remember going to the Board of Education meeting and finally being able to speak out. And at first they wouldn't let me speak because I didn't sign the paper. And then some older lady
rules.
She was like, let him speak. So finally I got my chance. And I was like, you know what? Like, you guys are up there deliberating over something that's going to affect the rest of our lives, and it's not going to have any effect on you when you go home, but this is something that's going to be detrimental to us. And I was like, we didn't fail that test, you know, that test failed us. And like the ovation that I got after that, and like I was just like, man, I wasn't expecting
cool.
that. So I kind of like always knew I had it in me to to lead. And
oh, very good, very good. So now, did you, you grew up in Hudson?
Yes.
Went to Hudson High School?
Yeah, went to Hudson High.
Hudson Schools, yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
all the Hudson Schools.
Okay.
So I'm homegrown.
And you are, now I know you're not the youngest ever mayor, but you are a very young mayor for Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
You are 34.
Yeah, youngest in Hudson.
Youngest for Hudson.
Not in the state.
Not for the state,
in
right.
In Hudson, yeah.
Right.
So, and the first African-American.
First African-American mayor in Hudson. That is something else to be
excited about.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, at the event that I saw you at yesterday for the veterans.
Yes.
One of the teacher's aides called me over to meet one of her students, and I walked over, and she was like, we taught you. And he reached his little hand out and said his name and said that he's 7 years old. And so I bent down to his level, and she's like, don't you want to know who he is as well? And then he looked, and I was like, how you doing? I was like, my name's Kamal, and I'm, you know, the new mayor around here. And, and he was just like, you're the mayor? Like, and I could tell, like, you know, he was looking at, you know, that my skin matched his skin
That.
So, like, that was, like, a cool moment.
That is very cool. Yeah, that was nice of you. Yeah, Kamal came to the honor vet ceremony, the last one of the year yesterday, which was nice of you to attend.
Event.
How did you hear about that? Did you find it on Facebook? Or?
Yeah, I've really been just trying to show up to everything, whether it's county or city. I want to be a part of everything and learn.
Yeah.
And also, you know,
that's
as a
cool.
son of a vet, I want to definitely make sure that I'm there to support our vets.
That's great to hear. And I think I read that on your post that you were the son of a veteran, which is really exciting. And I had actually had a conversation on Facebook, and I haven't yet followed up, but with Tiffany Garriga about, you know, I've been part of the honor vet ceremony for the committee for, gosh, a long time, longer than I've been clerk. I actually started when I was deputy clerk at the board of supervisors. But, you know, and we have honored a few African Americans, but I think we should try and, you know, get get more recognized because they served a role, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if people know their history, there were even African American soldiers fighting in the Civil War on the North Side.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, they certainly served their country just like white people. So that's something that we should talk about. And I hope, that you do come to more of the ceremonies. That's great. So let's get back to this whole political thing now. So, you know, it's interesting that you said you were a young man and, you know, you were like, hey, I could do this mayor thing or I could do this political thing. But how did you really start out? You mentioned being more active in the community.
So what's
your background there?
I started becoming like a community leader just off of like the people around me. Whenever something would happen, for some reason, people would just call on me like crazy. Even before I knew what the full situation was, they're like, you have to speak out against this. You have to talk against this. So I kind of became that voice. And my first dabble into politics came 2 years ago in my first campaign where I walked into the youth center and I hadn't been there for a few years. So when I looked around and I saw like the state of it and it just looked disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, this is like what our city plans are for our youth. This is the standards that we have. So I reached out to a bunch of elected officials and said, you know, I want to help with this and like I'll do it for free. And I showed up to a bunch of the meetings and they kept saying to me on the Common Council, you know, hey, you got great ideals, but, you know, you're not a part of the process. You're not at the table.
Mm-hmm.
You're not at the table, they kept saying. And I got tired of hearing that. So I got to the table and I ran my first campaign for first ward alderman. A lot of people counted me out on that campaign the same way they did for mayor. But I knew, you know, with hard work and, you know, being amongst the people that I would be victorious. So I was able to beat out, you know, an incumbent and have that seat. So once I got into that seat, I was really like seeing a lot of the things going on in the city and I had a different vision for where I wanted the city to go and some things that I wanted to see action on.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the only way I would be able to act on that vision is if I ran for mayor. So I was like, it's now or never. And this is, you know, a dream of mine since I was a kid. It was like a no-brainer. It was a nervous no-brainer, but it was a no-brainer that this is what I wanted. And I've been a student of the game. I've watched all my predecessors and, you know, all the elected officials and community leaders, and I've just been a sponge, and I was ready.
That's good. Yeah, obviously you were. That's very exciting, and your campaign seemed to have a momentum right from the start.
Yeah.
And you did have a primary, which... That was in June, right?
Yeah, yes, June 25th.
They moved it up this year. So, and you did fabulously in the primary.
Yeah.
You 2-1, or was it 3-1? What was the margin? 2-1.
2-1.
Yeah. Over an incumbent.
Yeah.
Which is even more of a, it's a very challenging thing to do to take on an incumbent. And, you know, but obviously your campaign, you worked hard. And you so tell us about the, your logo, the
hands on deck. AHOD. So
where was that born?
AHOD was born about 5 years ago.
Okay.
So it was myself, Vern Cross, Rainier, the whole Drive Time team.
Okay.
Including Claire Cousin, and we were like going through a bunch of different changes in the city, and I felt like we were being called on for a lot of things.
Yeah.
But for the same things that we were being called on, people were being paid to do those things. And they couldn't bring in the numbers of people that we could. So I said, you know, from now on, if we're going to be role models, then we have to get paid for our talents. And it has to be an all hands on deck, you know, process. And I think Vern or Rainier, like, they made the hashtag AHOD.
Yeah.
And we were putting that out early because that was, like, the name of our little team.
Right.
So when I announced I was running, like, when I got on the mic on Drive Time and I was, like, kind of, like, going off and I was really, like, amped up, that's what came out. And I was just, like, you know, it's all hands on deck. And I remember buying the first shirt and I didn't think it would be, like, anything. Like, I just wore the shirt, like, just to represent, and then everybody was like, oh, I want a shirt, I want a shirt, I want a shirt, and it went from there.
Just so you know, I wear a medium or a large.
All right. I would have brought you one. I don't know how your Republican friends would feel about you wearing this.
Hey, it's all okay. Not a worry.
So I'll get you a bipartisan one.
That's right. There you go. No worries. Yes. City politics are strange, we'll say.
I was disappointed in
all
city
over.
Politics this
year.
Yeah. I was very
Talk
disappointed
Why?
In a lot of our city leaders as well and committee people. Just because I felt like if you are representing, say, the Democratic Committee, you're not representing yourself. You're representing the people who vote for that position.
It's actually an elected position.
Yeah,
you were right.
So,
yes.
And I felt like a lot of people put their personal interests ahead of their party.
Welcome to politics.
So, yes. And I didn't feel like I got the recognition from some of the county and city committees that I should have, being that we just had an amazing primary where we broke a ton of records. And, you know, after that, it was kind of just like me and my team. Like, we didn't get the support that a lot of other candidates got. So I was disappointed in that.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing. I mean, so do you have ideas of how you can, you know, and are there a lot of, I mean, is the... the Republican Committee is not very diverse. Man, woman it is, but, you know, there's not a lot of Republican African-Americans or other, but, you know, is the Democrat Committee, is it diverse in that way, or is
I think it's diverse, but there's no, like, it's no team.
Okay.
And that's what, like, I was kind of hoping to see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, regardless of if you supported me in the primary or not, like, once I win, who the people chose, so then you should be behind me. You don't have to vote for me personally, but it's your job now to promote me.
Right.
And, you know, I know there was a big deal about people being cross-endorsed and all of that. I never cared or spoke anything ill about any of that. And a lot of people kept saying, like, Sarah Sterling, she was like, you know, Tom DiPietro and Kamal Johnson were you know, they were cross-endorsed in their first campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And but she failed to mention that I also won my primary in my first campaign. So, like, I didn't have to make a choice to run either way. And mm-hmm. I wasn't one of the people that was out there saying, you know, these guys shouldn't.
Hey, it's Cassie.
Hey, it's Shelby, and we're from Chatham.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM.
Acre, Catskill, and Hudson.
Listener-supported hands-on radio.
For Greene and Columbia counties. Have a nice day.
Yay!
Got questions about technology, cybersecurity? Whether it's a remote car starter or jellyfish, try your luck at stumping our panel on the Thingularity radio program. Just send your questions to CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com. That is CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com. And one of our many interns will be electroshocked into inducing an answer for your listening pleasure. Listen to the Thingularity radio program every first Thursday of each month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ann Cooper of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Like a fire hydrant, like a public drinking fountain, like a park bench, WGXC is always there for you, at your service. 90.7 FM, Community Radio.
Let's give thanks for Indigenous resistance. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Thanksgiving is one of the great foundational myths of the United States, turning a single gathering of Indigenous people in Massachusetts with English settler colonists in 1621 into one of the greatest whitewashes of genocide in world history. Even by that time, Native people throughout the Western Hemisphere had already suffered horrific violence for over a century at the hands of Christopher Columbus and other European explorers intent on enslaving Native people and exploiting the region's vast resources. Thanksgiving has morphed into an event celebrating family, feasting, and football, a day off before the commercial onslaught of holiday shopping, although the Black Friday sales frenzy has intruded on Thanksgiving Day as well. On this Thanksgiving holiday, we should reflect on our true history and on the remarkable ongoing Indigenous resistance to colonization. Not long after that mythic first Thanksgiving, colonists flocked to New England, numbering over 1,000 in 1630 and more than 10,000 by 1640. Rapacious demand for land and resources led to the Pequot War in 1636, when hundreds of Native people were massacred by colonial militias, followed by King Philip's War in 1675, when an estimated 3,000 Native people were killed. One of the earliest proclamations defining the holiday of Thanksgiving, made by Massachusetts Bay Governor William Dummer in 1723, thanked God for allowing them, quote, to defeat in some measure the repeated attempts of the Indian enemy against us and to defend so many of our frontier plantations from their rage and fury, unquote. Similar racist language appeared just over 50 years later in the Declaration of Independence, condemning, quote, the merciless Indian savages, unquote. The genocide proceeded from the forced displacement of Cherokee and other Native nations in what's remembered as the Trail of Tears to the relentless westward expansion under the racist Manifest Destiny doctrine, the imposition of the reservation system, followed by Indian boarding schools that separated Native children from their families, forbidding them from speaking their native languages and forcing assimilation, often under criminally abusive conditions. Treaties were made by successive presidents and always broken. As Oglala Lakota leader Red Cloud said, "They made us many promises, more than I can remember, but they kept only one. They promised to take our land, and they did," he said. In the fall of 1969, a group of Native American activists occupied the abandoned federal prison on Alcatraz Island in San Francisco Bay. Their manifesto used sarcasm, demanding the federal government hand over Alcatraz because it possessed all the qualities of a Native American reservation. Quote, one, it is isolated from modern facilities and without adequate means of transportation. Two, it has no fresh running water. Three, it has inadequate sanitation facilities. Four, there are no oil or mineral rights. Five, there's no industry, and so unemployment is very great. Six, there are no health care facilities. Seven, the soil is rocky and non-productive, and the land does not support game. Eight, there are no educational facilities. Nine, the population has always exceeded the land base. And 10, the population has always been held as prisoners and kept dependent upon others, unquote. The 19-month occupation involved thousands of people and inspired indigenous people across North America to demand justice. The American Indian Movement was founded, leading to the 1973 activist occupation of the town of Wounded Knee on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, galvanizing international solidarity for indigenous rights. On Thanksgiving Day 1970, members of the Wampanoag tribe organized the first National Day of Mourning in Plymouth, Massachusetts, with a march, vigil, and fast. The event now nears its 50th anniversary as a, quote, day of remembrance and spiritual connection, as well as a protest of the racism and oppression which Native Americans continue to experience, unquote. The youth of that era, now elders, joined thousands of indigenous young water protectors at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota in 2016 to oppose construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Among those young activists was historian Nick Estes of the Lower Brule Sioux Tribe. Estes, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour, recalled Thanksgiving 2016.
A prayer march that we led in the Bismarck Mall in Bismarck, North Dakota, to kind of bring attention to the Standing Rock struggle during a Black Friday shopping event, which was met by police armed with AR-15s, who then began punching and kicking water protectors who were holding a prayer in the Bismarck Mall. And I thought it was a really kind of jarring sort of contrast between, you know, the past and the present, to say that while there are sort of differences between the massacre of Pequots in Massachusetts to the contemporary sort of fight against an oil pipeline.
Now, almost 400 years since that first mythic Thanksgiving, Indigenous people are at the forefront of the fight against catastrophic climate change. For that, we give thanks. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Is this thing on? Are we going? this thing on. This is America, all the ships at sea. Anyone within the sound of my voice. I've got 50,000 watts of power. Electricity. Can you hear me now? Out on Route 128, dark and lonely. I got my radio on. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Welcome to my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. But there is no special girl! It's the end of radio. The last announcer plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? We'll be right back.
Is it really broadcasting if there's no one there to receive? It's the end of radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day, radio. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. We are tuning in the end today. We started off with the end of Radio from Shellac and then heard The Last DJ from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Now we're hearing The Last Jedi from John Williams. We're about to hear The End from the Beatles, and then In the End from Gregory Whitehead, The Last Time from the Rolling Stones, The Last from the Replacements, Last Dance from Donna Summer, The End of the World from Skeeter Davis, and We'll Meet Again from Vera Lynn, and then we'll end with The End from The Doors.
The beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end. In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end. In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end. In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end. In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end. In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end. In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end. In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end.
Yeah.